Welcome to Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast hosted by Daniela Steinfeld. I'm Daniela, and this podcast is about my personal and also about a lot of other people's enthusiasm for art. Art can touch on all parts of life, and therefore we talk about all parts of life. I hope to get you on board and to tell you interesting stories you enjoy listening to. For our international listeners, the podcast will be held mostly in English. We're recording via the internet, so please excuse any glitches and sound quality. Welcome to episode 83, recorded October 30, 2023. My guest is Christina Weg, who is since 2020 the first woman director of Kunsthalle Bielefeld and was before that the first woman director of Kästner Gesellschaft. Earlier on, she headed the Bonner Kunstverein and worked as a curator at Kunsthalle Basel. Amongst many others, she did exhibitions with artists like Monica Bonvicini, Monica Baer, John Baldessari, Rita McBride, Hege Young, Charlene von Heil, Annette Kern, James Richards, Franz Erdwalter, Christopher Williams, and Nicole Eisenman, to name just a few. She was responsible for extensive group exhibitions like Where Art Can Happen, the early years of CalArts, which was co-curated by Philipp Kaiser, who was also a guest on this podcast, and Made in Germany 3. Christina is also active on numerous committees and juries. Hi, Christina. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Daniela.
I'm always very curious to know, how did it start for you with art? What was your first influence, the first inspiration?
Well, it's not one singular experience, but one very decisive moment was when I was a teenager and my parents decided to go to Rome with us kids. And all of my life up till now, we are on a regular basis in Italy. Having grown up in Switzerland, it's not so far away, but I've never been to Rome till then. And so we went to Rome and we went to see exhibitions, but also churches. And I don't know, I was 14 or 15 years old and I was very bored.
Oh, you were very bored.
Yes, Rome looks like any other Italian city I've seen, a little bit larger. I was disappointed that there is not so many white Roman buildings. I had in mind some very kitsch. I probably have seen too many Hollywood movies beforehand. And then I was bored from all those churches.
Yeah, that sounds really inspirational.
So it was actually no inspiration at all at the first moment. But then we have friends, Italian friends, who we were, in fact, visiting in Rome. And the man, he's art historian and, in fact, architecture historian. Mm-hmm. So one afternoon, we walk with Paolo through Rome. And all of a sudden, everything was very interesting and very exciting. And everything, what was boring before, was all of a sudden very interesting. And so this was one of the first moments I learned that there is something like art history. And I realized, okay, well, this is actually quite the opposite of boring. So that was one major impulse.
That's very interesting because it is also due to the story, to how somebody talked about it, that suddenly your eyes were opened.
Yes, exactly. It was, in fact, later on, it happened on a different level. A little bit the same, because later I enrolled to study briefly in Santa Cruz in California, but I am from Zurich, so I did my main studies I did in Zurich. And in Zurich, when I was studying art history to study modern art, was definitely an aim. There were basically two professors, and in my eyes, best professor also was teaching architecture history. At that point, I was still not interested in architecture. I knew there was no way to get around, so I did it. And only when I had the midterm tests, I understood how much it interests me. And I got very enthusiastic. I still vividly remember how I went to whatever appointment I had in Zurich, and all of a sudden, all the cityscape spoke to me in ways which I would have never imagined before. So in the end, I have become very much interested in architecture. Basically, also one of the moments when I took over the post to be director of the Kunsthalle Bielefeld, mm-hmm. I think if I would not have had an interest in architecture, I would not have done it.
Because it was also the building?
Yeah, the building by Philip Johnson and needing to renovate and extend it. If I wouldn't have an interest in architecture, I wouldn't take over such a post. So to say it in short, sometimes experiences show you what you're interested in. Sometimes you even think something is not interesting and then it turns out it's very interesting.
Sometimes you don't know what you're interested in. You have to find out.
Exactly. And you cannot find out by yourself. It's experiences or
people.
People who you encounter, who open doors. Yeah. And of course, education. Hopefully this happens to everybody.
Hopefully. Yes, hopefully. But, you know, I mean, honestly, when I think back, I'm not 100% sure if education was what kind of like fired a spark in me to be interested in something. It was very often it was maybe a book. Or as with you, it was somebody who told me about something and I thought like, wow, that's interesting. I'm not sure if it was really school or university.
With me, it was this one experience in Rome. And then my family, my grandfather was a musician, classical musician. Let's say my childhood was mainly about being in concert halls. Of course, every once in a while we were in a museum, but it was how to, as little kid already, how to survive a classical concert. And then also to play an instrument yourself.
Which one did you play?
I played the violin then, and I went to a gymnasium, which was a so-called musisches. What would that be in English? I had instrument, but also drawing and arts. Yeah, arts gymnasium. Let's say arts was already in the system, not necessarily visual arts, but of course, there's lots of connections between the arts.
Yes, say. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And there's creative thinking and there's openness for certain things.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you decided then to be the one who mediates art or does exhibitions, makes exhibitions, is writing about it, thinking about it, not making it yourself or not becoming a musician.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, that was actually a very clear decision. Mm-hmm. I'm sure my grandfather was also very influential in the sense that he took me to culture. But definitely I knew from myself, I'm not an artist because the dedication and the talents. I mean, I saw what it meant with my grandfather. So there was totally clear to me, first of all, that I wouldn't meet those standards for myself. And also I was always interested in history. Looking back, sometimes one asks oneself how things have become the way they are. But looking back, when I was a young teenager, I had a very avant-garde history teacher. This teacher decided not to do tests in a classical way in history anymore, but he taught us, I don't know, the French Revolution. So he would speak weeks and weeks on the French Revolution. And then he just sent all the students to the library. And then we had a specific time slot to search all sorts of texts and information from the library on the French Revolution. And then we had to do a paper, like a collage, on what we have found and tell the story ourselves. And that was the test, actually. So we didn't need to know any dates by heart, but we had to search for the information in the library and put it together ourselves. And I loved this type of tests. Other students were totally lost because they wanted to be asked about certain dates and that's it. But funnily enough, many years later, I realized, yeah, that was actually my art history, right? You know, to tell a story and to pick together facts or stories, images, this interest to be a storyteller in some ways.
Yes. And also there's two ways. First, it's like you really know where things are coming from, where we are coming from, where art and culture are coming from in the art historical field, but also always every new generation has new interpretations of that, what was coming before. So that exactly. Is also very interesting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the historiography of stories, of course. And there was only a very short period, you know, in my generation, while we were studying, we were also working. And I actually, in between my studies, did an extra education a little bit in goldsmithing. So I almost dropped my studies to become a goldsmith.
Yeah, which is arts and crafts.
Exactly. So it would have been the crafts rather than the art. But then by the time I learned a little bit the goldsmithing, I more and more was interested to learn the old techniques. And there again, I was in the history. And then if I would have followed that path, I would have become rather restorator. I got interested then in the restoration rather than in the inventing. I mean, I started out with the inventing, but the more I did it, yeah, it was also interesting to look at old paintings and see what jewelry they wear. Mm-hmm. In art history, of course, that makes a difference if you have to give dates for whatever paintings.
Also, the jewelry tells you something about class.
Exactly.
It tells you something about the whereabouts, about so many things. But it's interesting that in every field, you end up in the history. And nevertheless, you're working in contemporary art, mostly.
Yes.
How did that happen?
How did that happen?
Why didn't you end up in old art?
Yeah, what I didn't speak about yet in my probably early childhood, I don't know, comes from a personal background, the interests, of course. I mean, I did study art history. Also, we had to choose two other fields too. And my second major was ethnology, and the third was philosophy. And as I mentioned earlier, I started off in the US to study, and there actually I studied cultural studies, which when I went back to Zurich didn't exist in Zurich yet. So that's why I, instead of cultural studies, I ended up with ethnology and philosophy as two separate fields. So I did go and study history. I studied art history. And now contemporary art, probably if I would have studied in the States, I would have ended up in cultural studies and not even in art history, because I'm interested always in cultural backgrounds, and I see art as a type of language that is being mediated. And I myself grew up speaking Hungarian at home, growing up in Switzerland, as being a family from refugees, having family in Austria, in Hungary, in at that time Czech Republic, in the US. I always had to transmit different worlds or mediate different worlds. Like my relatives in Budapest are very different from the relatives in Washington, D.C., from the relatives in Zurich. There's always cultural differences that involve translation. Translation is perhaps the best.
This sounds like a skill which is very important right now, to translate.
Well, I would say always, but why do you think right now?
Probably because it seems that this acceptance of different opinions, different cultural backgrounds that mean different things, that this translation is getting harder. On one hand, it's getting easier, much easier than ever, because we have all the means of communication. On the other hand, it's getting harder because it's very hard to decide which information is right, which information is not fake, you know? So we need to develop new skills. So people that are able to translate to other translators, to tell the stories of different people, I think that's a very valuable skill.
Yeah, I can see your point. Yeah, I mean, I think it's much easier. People nowadays know, like, the transcultural possibilities, bridging is by technical means. Like, that's the good part of globalization, that it's just easier to travel, it's easier to communicate, all that. So, but then we all know there's tons of bubbles, and we need to try to bridge those bubbles or gaps. And that's the point. That's what is getting more difficult.
Bridging, that's nice.
Like the contemporary, perhaps as last moment, very, very decisive in my working life. As mentioned, I always wanted to study modern art history. And then I studied with Professor Fomos, and then lots of architecture history and all different arts, which are bridging between architecture and art. At my times, it was not clear that you can write a master's thesis on contemporary art, but I was one of the first who have done it at the University of Zurich. So there was already contemporary, and then the first post at Kunsthalle Basel, that was very decisive, of course, because then once I was at Kunsthalle Basel and just understood how it is to work with artists, living artists, and how exhibitions actually happen or are being organized, I was totally fond of it. I sticked to it. I mean, there was no question I wanted to then be really close to artists and be really contemporary.
I once read that you said that you never really had a real plan. You were just following what you were interested in, but you end up being like the director of a very important Kunsthalle. So in between, doors just open up and you just said, oh, that's great. That's an interesting door. I walk through that. Or how did you find your rhythm, how you wanted to work, what you exactly wanted to make?
I'm not sure where you read that, but I assume I definitely said such a thing before. This I would mainly coin to my studies. Like I would always also advise people, young people who study, doesn't matter what field, but you know, just follow your passion, follow your interest and follow your passion. Then I'm very sure that whatever it's going to show, it's going to find a place in the world.
But after you followed your passions, you more or less knew in which direction you wanted to go.
Yeah, it was very natural. I mean, first, I was over 4 or 5 years at the Kunsthalle Basel. It was fantastic there. It was, of course, a beautiful place to start off with, learning how to do exhibitions from the scratch.
To make good exhibitions, you have to really dive into that field. You have to see a lot. You have to learn a lot.
Yeah, to me, it was important to have a very good director and curator, Peter Parkes, who taught me a lot. Then it was, of course, the artists themselves. They are the big teacher to understand that each artist is different and there is no recipe for any kind of exhibition.
No.
Also to see how works actually are being produced for exhibitions. This was all very new as coming out of university. So it's all new to me. And then it was to me also clear I want to work abroad at some point. Also, that was an interest. And then there was this post in Bonn.
The Bonner Kunstverein.
Which seemed very interesting to me. And because I was at that point then clear, I want to be close to the artists. I wasn't so much interested in going into a big museum. Yeah, at that point, I was very, very contemporary and wanting to be very close in working together with artists.
So the Bonner Kunstverein was just the right place then to be.
Yeah, it was difficult in the beginning because I was not used to work with so few means. So I had to learn a lot. But in the end, I stayed there for almost a little bit more than 10 years. That was a very great time. Yeah, the region, the Rhineland is, I don't need to tell you what an amazing region this is, talking about audience and the artistic community.
Absolutely. But you excelled. Before you went to Bonn, you got a stipend for curators from the ISCP. And then as director of the Bonner Kunstverein, you also got a Swiss prize, actually, for art and mediation from the Bundesamt für Kultur in der Schweiz. So because you completely reinvented the Bonner Kunstverein. And this is also the time when we first met, I think. So that was obviously a time which left an important imprint. You wanted to continue your path. What was the decision to leave Bonn then?
Well, you know, a Kunstverein, I did 2 terms. So it was 2 terms. That was perfect. And in between, I had also 2 children. I was 1.5 years off duty. And I don't know whether I reinvented it. I mean, I did the restoration of the building. Of course, my predecessor, Annelie Polen, was a fantastic, legendary director. And I hope that some of my program, it's other people to evaluate what I've done there. But I was, of course, honored to receive the prize. after two periods, it was clear it's good for the institution, it's good for me, for anybody who is directing a Kunstverein. You should never do that forever. So then the next step was the Kästner Gesellschaft in Hannover, which is again a Kunstverein, but you know, a much larger Kunstverein, actually quite comparable to the Kunsthalle Basel. Not as avant-gardist as Kunsthalle Basel. Kästner Gesellschaft is already also showing more known artists. Yeah, it was just larger projects. It doesn't have a collection.
Kästner Gesellschaft is very acclaimed.
Yeah.
And you did some important exhibitions there, but it does not have a collection.
Exactly. But at that point, after the Kunstverein Bonn, I was really keen on, you know, finally having more means to do. For instance, that's what one of the first shows I've done there was with Rita McBride. Finally do a show with, you know, considerable works I was able to show, which I couldn't do so in Bonner Kunstverein because there was just not enough means.
Yeah, and also in the Kunstverein, like Bonner Kunstverein, you usually also show younger artists.
Exactly.
Very often it's the start for artists to show in Kunstverein. And Kästner Gesellschaft is a much more established house.
So it was perfect. And then after a while, after 5 years in Kästner, it was totally clear that at some point it could have been also after 8 years or after 10 years or whatever. The opportunity was after 5 years already there. But it was clear to me that the next step would be a museum because I'm really interested in working also with collection and getting myself older. I think good curators keep interest in the youngest art and keep also communication with youngest generations. But there is no way out. We all become older. And usually you tend to have like best relations to your own generation or let's say artists close to your own generation. At least I think that's visible often in exhibitions and programs. It's also just about being challenged in your own life again newly. So it was clear to me that the next step is I'm interested in working in a museum, which means museum, the definition is, yeah, that it has a collection. That's how I ended up at this point at Kunsthalle Bielefeld. The title of the institution is a little bit, for lots of people, confusing because usually a Kunsthalle is exactly a place without collection. But we all know there's Kunsthalle Bremen, there's Kunsthalle Bielefeld, and there's Hamburger Kunsthalle, institutions with great collections.
There are museums, they just don't have museum in the name.
Exactly, yeah.
And they're functioning museums because they have a collection you can work with, but there's also an ongoing collecting.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
As you said, for the next generation or for the younger generation. You said before that art is a language. Do you think when we get older that the language changes during time and we cannot follow those new languages, or is there a possibility to learn? How do we deal with that we're getting older, but there's a new generation and we have to kind of like learn that language
too? Of course. No, I think it's always about learning constantly, but some languages are easier to learn than others, let's say, for various people. It's different difficulties or capacities. So I don't think it's to generalize, but for sure, a generation always shares a lot. So the people from your own generation, artists from your own generations, you share sort of starting points with them. The older you grow, the more time gap is in between. And of course, some people can follow very easily and some, I don't know, we shouldn't generalize that moment, but you can just watch. There are certain colleagues of mine who follow the younger generation still and others don't. I wouldn't say it's bad or worse. It's just different talents. But, you know, to really follow the youngest generation, which I did when I was young myself, I was just also, you know, going out all the time and meeting everybody in whatever bars and studios and constantly being on the road and all that. And of course, I can't do that anymore or not as much anymore. Of course. And so I'm always very curious to go now to the Kunstvereine and see what the young colleagues are doing, and very open-minded thinking about what they propose, what we should look at from the youngest scenes. So perhaps that's, you know, the credibility. I'm not going to tell anybody that the youngest scene I know. That's other people who know that. I used to know that.
You think there's others that are more into it because it's their generation and it's more natural for them. Yeah, absolutely. But still, one can learn from them. But also, I still believe also the other way around. They can also learn from the generations that went before.
Yeah.
Like we did, you know, like we look back, like this is why history, art history is so important. And I think really as a woman of your generation, you're also a role model because you now are the first woman director of Kunsthalle Bielefeld, and the same was at Kästner Gesellschaft. And also, I think it is not unimportant that as a woman who has an international career, you also have two children and a family. And in one interview I read, you said, to develop a career as a woman and to have a family, in my experience, that's important to have a partnership in which the man does not want to have the traditional roles, but he's also adapting, he's supporting.
Yeah, of course. I mean, luckily, I'm not the only one, and it's clear we are the first generation in art history, but also artists, women artists, also the first generation who have children. Actually, that generation is a little bit younger than mine.
Where it's more normal to have children and have a career.
Yeah, I mean, before it was totally not normal.
Yeah. It was not possible before.
Sometimes it's strange to think back. Luckily, it's strange to think back because I still remember, you know, hearing, especially talking about women artists, people saying that if a woman artist has a child, she cannot be an artist anymore. These things have happened and there are still biases, but less and less. And that's also why you'll find such interviews from me, because I'm being asked often about these things. In Germany, there was various women in my field who have done the same, whereas in Switzerland, there was no such role models for me. And in the beginning, it was important. Now, I'm so thankful it's gotten normal. It's really good.
What are you doing right now in Bielefeld?
What's going on there? We right now have a wonderful, wonderful show with Oscar Tuazon, an American artist who is working in between sculpture and architecture and installation. I'm trying now to get the threads together we spoke about before. So what I really do love now is that when you enter our museum, you on the backdrop have one of our important works of the collection, a piece by Frank Stella called The Kurasan Gate from 1968. It's a shaped canvas, color field painting, which it's a whole series of gates he has done in this manner, and which is alluding to architecture, in fact, architecture from Morocco, gate, the gate, Kurasan. And then in front of that, a sculpture by Oscar Tuazon, which is made from wood he found at Palais de Tokyo in the basement. So he's reusing materials. Most often he's using recycled materials. And he posed this question to himself, how to construct a minimal form of space. Basically, it's a couple of wooden beams put together in a very do-it-yourself manner. And then there's some little piece of beton also because the wood was not too short at some side. And so you have another gate. You have a second gate. You have the Stella gate on the wall, and then you have a gate in the space by Oscar. And I just love how these two artistic gestures come together, and you know, you go through a gate, welcome the visitor, and one piece is a painting and made 68, and the other is a sculpture installation which looks like unfinished and very raw, and by Oscar done just recently. And I love how the different media, the different time, how the different artistic generations are coming together. All my work, I love to do Basically, we have three different shows in the year. And with each show, we show also collection. We curate newly for each show in correspondence to what we show as extra shows. So with Oscar Tourzon, there's different themes in his artistic work. And then we pick out works from the collection which recall themes which we find in Oscar's work. Or we've done the same with Ito Barada or some projects. It's really very closely connected, this dialogue between artistic generations, which I'm so interested in. We sometimes really emphasize that even more.
Is also the artist involved? So yes. You invite also the artist to work with the collection? It's a mutual development.
Yes, yes. The artists are always informed that we reinvent or we curate the collection in relation to their art. And if we see that the artist is even more than usually interested, then we also work together on that.
I find that such an alive concept to work with a collection and to work with living contemporary artists at the same time.
Well, I assume this idea comes out of my prior work. So I'm very used to work with living artists. I had to learn, or I'm still learning to work with already deceased artists. So it comes from this dialogue with artists I so much like or love. Also, we are a small museum. In a larger museum, it would be probably not feasible because structurally or logistically, it would be much too much organization. You can't change three times a year the collection hanging in a big museum. That's impossible. It doesn't make sense.
But the Kunsthalle Bielefeld has the perfect size for that. And kind of like through that, the collection becomes very now. It makes sense now also. And the living artist kind of like connects with history. I think that's a pretty smart and really, really interesting concept.
Well, I remember when we, when my team 3 years ago worked together on something like a mission and a vision, I brought up this not so usual term in the museum world of the laboratory. The laboratory you would always put to a Kunstverein rather, and not so much to a museum. But my standpoint was, because we are a small museum, we can be a laboratory. And talking about the laboratory also with the history we are home to with the collection. And now I think we do that. And now we don't argue anymore on that term. But in the beginning, my team was like, oh, we're not necessarily a laboratory, because it's not so usual for a museum to think of itself as a laboratory.
But also museums have to reinvent themselves.
Exactly. I mean, they've always done it, or always continuously they do it, but even more so in these days. And yes, this idea has to do with the size of the museum, and the concepts are always tied to a space, and a place has grown out of that. We are heading towards a renovation and extension of the building. That's a lot of work and a long run to it, but very exciting. And yeah.
How long will the run be?
Well, we are just confronted with new time schedules. So at this point, it seems to me that, I mean, definitely by the end of the year, soon is the end of the year, right? We will be able to announce publicly which architect is going to develop with us the renovation and extension. It's a competition which was internationally written out this year, and which was asking for an office which has enough experience and which is going to develop with us together all the planning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to happen in the next year. At this point, I cannot properly tell you, probably another 2 years till some construction site is there.
You were talking about space and place, and I think this is something, despite all the digital and online possibilities we have now, is like space and place are not exchangeable. It's like the Kunsthalle Bielefeld is a certain architecture with a certain space. It will be enlarged and it will be renovated, but still it cannot be at another place. You know, it's just there, and it has certain rooms and certain walls and certain things that are very special. And so certain exhibitions can only happen there. I mean, I think that's very often the case with special museums.
I would even say that if you've done a good show, good exhibitions, doesn't matter whether they are in Bielefeld or somewhere else, but good exhibitions are always about working out something very specific to a certain place. It's always connected, of course, with an architecture, but also with an institution or a place in the broadest sense. And perhaps I need to clarify. So 1968, this very, nowadays we are a landmark. It's a late modernist architecture. So it's not a white cube, our building. And it's by Philip Johnson. It shows like first moments of a glimpse to postmodernism already. And it's very specific architecture. And it allows for certain things to happen in show, but certain things are impossible to do. At the same time, I really do compare it with such outstanding buildings like the Guggenheim by Frank Lloyd Wright, because it's a historical experience of exhibition space. It's not a neutral space. It's if you enter the museum, you instantly understand you are in a historic space. And that makes exhibition making very specific there and fun, but also some things are impossible. And we need to renovate that place. And I'm saying, I think if you renovate something, the goal needs to be that it's after the renovation, it functions for the next 50 years again, the museum. You know, if you imagine you would have built a house 1968, and then you would fall asleep like Sleeping Beauty, and you wake up and you go, you work, and then you drive home, and then you are at your house, which was built 68. Then you will realize you cannot park your car because your car is double the large. The kitchen is dysfunctional. In museum, the same thing has happened. So certain functions which were implemented are not functional anymore. And then the museum has, of course, new functions today, which haven't been there in the 60s. And we need to take care of these new functions. And so there is the extension coming into play. So to me, it's very important to make understandable that I don't think we opt for extra space just to have extra space. It sounds a little bit stupid now, but we need extras because of new functions or dysfunctional functions now. How much more space we need and where the space is situated at, this is all to be solved with the architects from next year on.
And where will the art go? What will happen with the art, the programming during the time of renovation?
So we have on the sculpture park on the other side, there is a building which is now a small museum called Stenoforum. And this building has only a few years ago, it has been redeveloped as exhibition space and it's privately funded and the funding is going to be ended in 1.5 years. So that place is going to be our place for the time our museum is under construction. So we will have a much smaller, but with high-tech exhibition space not far away from where we are now. In fact, we will always see from our new place our construction site, but we plan to be mainly active in the city with projects in the public space, because I believe the time while we are without a proper home, we should meet the city on different terms. And that's also a great chance to make connections to other type of audiences, to learn different things as institution. And I'm very curious how that's going to develop. And also our collection then is, of course, we're going to be more open to perhaps try to show our collection somewhere else, or partly we can still work in the new place with our collection, of course.
Do you already know what you will show when the museum is reopened, or is that still too far away in the future.
Very far away. We just started to really, you know, to work programmatically on the situation, how to leave our house and how to work in that other space and in the cities. That's only going to happen in 3 years, probably earliest. But we already think about it now because, of course, we need to, because it's such a big change. And in planning, you need to do that. And so, but how we go back, that's all up in the air. Yeah. Too many other things happen in between.
Last question. Is there some wish or vision or idea you have where you think like, oh, I would like that to happen in the next couple of years, something in Bielefeld or from Bielefeld into the world? What would you wish for the next few years?
Well, I think we are going through difficult times, politically, economically. I haven't experienced, I mean, sometimes if I think back, I think in the last 5 years, it was triple as many changes than the 10 years before. I'm not sure whether that's right, but how I experienced it, how I feel about it, it's really in the last couple of years with Brexit, Trump, Corona, now the two wars, not to mention climate crisis. I mean, so many decisive, really lots of things on our minds. And with it, an economical shock or difficulties also coming. And I think art and culture is more than ever needed, but also yes, is going to be under attack. Under attack is too much said, but, you know, we're going to need to fight for funds and all that. It's already happening. Yes. Work gets more difficult, even though we know in these times, art is more than ever important. And this, my wish would be that we in Bielefeld, but also everybody in culture, that we will be able to transmit that into the public, that people are going to understand. If you go back to Corona, lots of people, while everything was shut down, at some point started really to miss culture.
Yes.
And I wish people would remember this more in these days. I think one can always, historically, you can look back. You can look back at World War One and Two, and then you can read about people trying to survive whatever, to survive some really dramatic, traumatic, existential moment. And then you would think for these people, it was really not important culture. They needed to survive. They needed bread. They needed whatever. And then if you read, you understand most people talk about that. They've survived also, not only because of the bread, but because they had whatever poem in their mind or a visual moment in their mind, which gave them strength, whatever. And this to make it visible. I mean, we're all in our work, especially in the work of the museum. I believe that a collection is a visual archive of our values, of values which are shared in society. And we in these days discuss who is part of the society. Who did we forget? Whose voices have we forgotten? Whose voices were cut off? Because we all know it was a white, patriarchic, hegemonic society. So various voices have been left out. So we reconnect and we try to get those voices now in. And what does it mean with all our societal upheavals we encounter today? I mean, so my wish would be that we manage to transfer the power, the good power, the energy which lies in these discussions of values, that we manage to transmit that in a way that people understand even more the role of culture, or that they can really find some good place for them within culture in these times.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Christina.
Thank you, Daniela.
Please find links and a text about my guest in the show notes. For more information on Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast, follow us on Instagram at Voices on Art and at van_horn_Düsseldorf. Visit our website van-horn.net. and subscribe to Voices on Art on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the platform of your choice. Thank you for listening to Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast hosted by Daniela Steinfeld. Stay tuned and connect.